All right, so it's probably 6:03 now. We will call the meeting of Public Works to order. Could the police rise to pledge for the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Clerk Tierney, please do a roll call for me.
Chair Petit.
Here.
Deputy Chair Fabiano is not here. Legislator Litz.
Here.
Legislator Nolan.
Here.
Legislator Erner.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. And since this is my last Public Works meeting, I did order a pizza that is not paid for in any way with county money that's out of pocket. Full disclosure.
Thank you.
Hopefully there's enough for everybody. Okay. So moving on to the agenda. Got the one from Health Committee, I'm sorry. Thank you. I'll entertain a motion to approve the November 1st, 2023 minutes. Are we doing them both at once or should we separate them out? And the October 23rd joint meeting. Do we separate them out?
Correction for one of those.
Okay, so a motion on the November 1st meeting minutes. So your motion for discussion.
Second.
Legislator Erner, seconded by Nolan. Legislator Erner.
This is the November 1st, you said, Chair?
Yes.
Okay.
So hearing no discussion, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Now on the October 23rd, 2023 joint meeting of Public Works and Ways and Means. Motion for discussion?
I'll move it.
Legislator Nolan, seconded by Legislator Erner. Legislator Erner.
Here, the record should put me in with the other committee members who are present. Sorry. Okay.
Okay. Any other discussion? So on the minutes as amended?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Okay, on to there's no action taken on this one in the Health Committee. This is resolution number 337. So we can do the same if I don't hear a motion for discussion. No? Okay. So no motion on that one. Resolution number 364. How did I lose that? Because we just did all that blocking and everything on the other agenda. Did somebody else? Okay, no. Got it. Somebody here. Okay, since we do have Chair Bartels here, we can take this one in order. So it's a motion to discuss resolution number 364, establishing a restricted capital reserve fund for the Government Operations Center of the County of Ulster. Motion for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Okay. Chair Bartels, did you want to discuss this?
Sure. So this was amended in Law Enforcement Committee it was originally submitted at $29 million. It was amended to $18
million. Mm-hmm.
$18 million is what we just approved in the budget. The budget reflected this $18 million being in a restricted fund. I've talked at length about why I think this is smart in terms of spending from a capital reserve when we have such excesses as we have, but also keeping us in compliance with our fund balance policy, which, again, our balanced fund balance policy reflects this $18 million in. So this is certainly, if this weren't to pass, we would have to do something pretty radical.
And I did speak with the executive this afternoon because I think there should be more put in, but she feels that there'll be additional grants and other types of funding that will be coming in. I mean, because we're up to almost 30 million on this project, aren't we?
In terms of the estimates, I haven't seen the most recent estimates. I mean, I know that a portion of the project is the solar portion, and that's just that was estimated at 14. So
yeah.
I would expect it to be significant. But you can always move to put more monies into this reserve fund depending on where things are next year in terms of fund balance. And it's something that I think that the legislature should be looking to do based on whether or not our fund balance policy, you know, measures things off of what's unrestricted, not unassigned. And so our finance people will be keeping the next legislature cognizant of that. And it wasn't always that way. I would think it's smart to be that way, but I feel like this is reasonable, and this is what the executive's budget that we just adopted with our amendments assumed.
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, I think the chair makes good arguments. I prefer to do it the other way. I mean, one way is you put this cap on, and then if there's a need to spend money beyond it, then you get that. You run into conflict with this resolution. But we do have these financial analysts, and if we do run into a problem in the resolution or some kind of application for the solar part of this project needs to go in, and that's in conflict with this resolution, then I don't like having multiple breaks on a project that we know is going to cost more than this, and that we want, that needed to be done 2 years ago. So I'm a little concerned about unintended consequences that this will slow something down that needs to be moving ahead directly.
Sorry, I'm so anxious to respond. So I feel like there may be a misunderstanding with a previous resolution. This in no way sets a cap to the project cost. It in no way affects the project cost. This says that out of the project cost, $18 million is going to be spent from this capital fund, meaning basically we're going to pay for $18 million of it in cash. And if it ends up costing, I don't want to throw numbers out, but numbers no one wants to hear,
mm-hmm.
This resolution does nothing to stop that.
Okay.
This resolution just helps to offset future debt service because we're paying $18 million of it in cash. So
it sets money aside so we don't have
not
to
be confused. Exactly. It's not to be confused with the previous resolutions that did set caps. That's a totally different deal. This is no
okay.
Cap.
So we're talking about 309, though. No.
Talking about
364.
309, we just moved with no action. 309.
Okay. So I got it. Thank you. That's.
You think that's what it is?
Blame it on the
pizza. There are some people who can't chew gum and walk at the same time. I apparently cannot chew pizza and keep my resolution straight at the same time. Thank you. Your description didn't meet the wrong resolution's title.
I'm glad about that.
I'm fine with this one.
Do we have any other discussion or questions? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Abstention, Legislator Litz. Thank you. I am pulling Resolution 669.
What happened to 468?
468. That's not in the.
That was last action.
Do you have a new one?
So, do you want to clarify that? It's just not on the agenda for tonight, or are you withdrawing it altogether?
That is, I'd like to take no action on it tonight. Okay, I would like to propose a block on Resolution 685, 686, 687, 688. They are all ARPA funding for our parks.
Second.
Second.
The block.
Thank you. On the block?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. So do we have any questions before I take a vote on the ARPA funding as blocked? Legislator Erner.
In the ARPA committee, some of this was discussed, 685 and 688, the fact that they both fund the same project, and that would appear to contravene our own policy around and any one project only receiving a maximum of $100,000 for the project, which this would then fund it at $200,000. I personally like the fact that Ellenville and Warsing, that two municipalities, of course they're related municipalities, collaborate on a project, but I did want to point that out, and there was a difference of opinion in that committee that Chair Bartels also attended and could speak to further. And I also wanted to say that the amount of money we put in the fund originally, $2 million, if you divide that by 100,000 per project, then you can fund at most 20 projects at 100,000 each for the 24 municipalities that we have, for what that's worth.
Chair Bartels?
Yeah, so in the other committee, I voted against it for the reasons, those two, for the reasons discussed, just because our policy does say per project.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that now since we blocked it. I'll move it out of this committee to the floor. It's okay. Yeah, I mean, I'll move it out of this committee to the floor, and between now and then I'll consider it. You know, I spoke to the representative from that, one of the representatives from the district, who said that the town and the village originally, from my understanding, originally applied for separate projects and were encouraged by our ARPA team to combine. So while I don't agree with that, and I disagree with the ARPA team doing that, since it goes against what our own policy said, it puts me in a tough position in terms of feeling for municipal applicants who were advised to do something that actually went against. I would hate to punish the municipalities who were given, in my estimation, erroneous direction, but now we're here and they have projects, they have a project before us. So I'm inclined to support it with reservation, but I'll certainly support it coming out of this committee.
They're two separate taxing authorities.
They are.
But is this Burn Park
it's in the village.
Like an aid, so it's only in the village. Okay.
Within the village, and then the argument was that the village is in the town, but I find that to be sort of a preposterous argument when it's an independent. I mean, obviously the village is in the town, but if you're thinking of it as a distinct municipality, you know, then it would only be towns with villages that could get $200,000 for their parks. You know what I mean? It's also unfair. There's only three then. Only three places could get. So, but again, since Nate is nodding, since the municipalities got the direction from our ARPA division, I feel especially conflicted about now sort of punishing them with a vote that came out there as a result of directions they received from county.
Legislator Litz and then Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I mean, I was just curious. The projects that were proposed by the two different municipalities, was it the same work? Or is one doing lighting and another one doing fencing, or is it two different contractual type projects, or is it $200,000 for one project?
My understanding is that, and I don't have the project manager here for all direct communications, but I believe we actually received separate applications, but then it was combined into one. As I have reviewed the application, it may have gotten confused because in the instructions it did say one per municipality, and I don't think it specified the per project, which I do realize is in the resolution. As far as it goes, the projects are not separate. From what, because it was one application with letters of support from both municipalities specifying how they would support the project with their own funds. And I wanted to make sure that there were separate contracts with a specific provision in that contract, which I believe is available to the committee, regarding how before we release any construction funding, there will be an intermunicipal agreement between Ellenborough and Moira Worsing regarding how they will procure, how they will contract, because that hasn't directly been specified to us. So there is an added protection that I specifically wanted to put into two separate contracts for both municipalities. Each contract will be $100,000, $100,000, but as it stands, they do have it almost pretty much identical scope of work. Let's just say identical, I think it is. So yeah, to be clear, it is one project at the moment.
Thank you.
Sure. But just for clarification to what I was saying is my understanding from talking to one of the legislators that represent the district is that initially they were talking about two separate projects, not two separate projects at the same property, but one village project, a property in the village, and one project, a property in the town. And then it was suggested they might combine, seeing the benefits of both, because obviously town members benefit from a park in the village, because again, this is a unique setup that three municipalities have. I think we just get a little bit in the weeds when the directions came from the county. I mean, I think it's important to have those protections, because again, we're contracting with the village and we're contracting with the town, each to do the same project, which means that unless we're deeming one as a subcontractor for the other, which isn't really loud, like they each have to be doing individual contracting for the, so this is why it was supposed to be one project. This, it was, and our, I just think it's important moving forward that we really, and this has happened in ARPA before, not in this project or from this division's result, but in other aspects of ARPA that were effectuated through other areas where legislative intent was not directly achieved. And I think it's really important that that be held to high account. But again, in this case, especially understanding how towns, villages, municipalities work their budget, I'm struggling with the fact that I don't want to punish the village or the town when it seems like they did what they did in good faith under advisement. So,
Legislator Nolan?
I guess I just wonder if our language in specifying project was the best language given this project, which by the agreement of the collaboration of the town and the village makes a bigger project possible. And it's true that we didn't allocate $100,000 for each municipal category in the county, but we did close, and our thinking was that several towns or villages might not have any projects. So I think it may be a good outcome, even though there was this language about project that we had and a different approach taken by ARPA. I just think it's a good outcome, and so I feel better about it, even though there may have been those places where we didn't anticipate this particular configuration that would generate what I think is a very valuable project that could not be accomplished by $100,000.
Chair Bartel.
Thanks. Again, having been there for the initial conversations in the ARPA committee in terms of intent, a lot of this was about incentivizing the most diverse group of projects that might not otherwise happen. And this was the same with the not-for-profits and for-profits that might not otherwise happen without our contribution, or our contribution being the spark for as many different individualized projects. And I can be clear, and you could go back and listen, that we were talking about in each individual municipality. We understood that in many of these cases, these projects were going to be much bigger than $100,000 projects potentially, but that our money would incentivize the federal money through us would incentivize these projects happening. It was never contemplated that, I think it's always obvious that more money is going to make more happen. And any municipality, any one of these municipalities, if you said, well, instead of 100,000, we'll give you 500,000, what can you do? I mean, just know about my municipality, because they were like, they were so excited, and they were batting back and forth ideas. And if there was more money, they would have had more ideas and more projects, and they would have come with more projects, one municipality. So, and also remembering that we're talking about a diverse set, we say it all the time, like we're a county the size of Rhode Island with a diverse, you know, we're talking about some municipalities that have massive population centers and some municipalities with tiny population centers, and they're all being treated the same as municipalities. And so again, that's another reason why we were talking about individual projects and three potential municipalities, event six in our communities having this ability to maximize benefit was not what was intended, but given the directive from the county, I feel like it's difficult for me to oppose. And certainly it would be really difficult for me to oppose if my opposition was going to result in its failure. It's one thing like for me to oppose on principle, but it's another if it would result in its failure and both these municipalities losing out. So,
Legislator Litz?
I don't have a problem bringing this out of committee. I mean, this is an area of our county we know that's needed help for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Several years ago, we dedicated $1 million to the Ellenville Million because it's in a part of the county that needs help. So why not give them the help if there's two other villages in our county that could have, quote, doubled up on their money? I don't think they're in anywhere, way, shape, or means in the same dire straits that Ellenville is in. So I have no problem bringing this out of committee.
And I tend to agree with moving it forward for different reasons. When I was employed by New Paltz, and I'd frequently sit in on town board meetings with the village, and they had intermunicipal agreements for, say, Moriello Park, which was the town and village pool, and they did pool money in, and they did go for grants together. So I think I'm okay moving this forward. Perhaps, you know, if something else did come up in the future, having one, if it is a village town type of work relationship, that it be two separate projects, like as somebody said, lights and fencing, or, you know, a playground and whatever. This way it would be clearly delineated with an intermunicipal agreement. It's a very good idea. Legislator, or no?
It's okay.
I do have something, but
sure.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate Legislator Litz's point about that area of the county needing help.
Yeah.
I appreciate, as I said earlier, the collaborative approach here. I mean, if we had, just for example, well, we know the Rondout Municipal Center is on the boundary of two towns, and if they decide they wanted to apply for funds for that place that's on the border of Marbletown and Rosendale,
mm-hmm.
combined that way, then every town in this county has a border with another town, and they could do that. And actually, I think if I had to do it again, I might even encourage that, despite the idea to diversify projects. I appreciate that idea, but I think to build something bigger, you had a three-way border, like on three town, like have a real amazing park on the boundary of,
yeah.
you know, any three towns that wanted to, like, go for it. They wouldn't be able to get another project in their individual separately, but if that's how they wanted to go, then I would encourage that. So I'm prepared to support this tonight.
$100,000 project. Incredible. Okay. So any other discussion? Hearing none, a vote on the block. Aye.
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 Anyone in opposition? Any abstentions? Resolution number 689, granting an easement of land owned by Ulster County, located on Route 28 in the town of Ulster, for the construction of a sewer line to serve a supportive housing development. Motion for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second. Rich Clearlitz. Have any questions on this? It did just pass through the health committee. All right, I will call the vote then. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Resolution number 696, authorizing the county executive to submit an application and assurances to the New York State Department of Transportation for transportation alternative program funding for construction of active transportation improvements on Washington Avenue in the city of Kingston.
I'll move it.
Thank you. Second. Director Doyle.
So this is a TAP application. It is for a pedestrian signalization and signal associated with the intersection of the Kingston Rail, which we've distantly completed, and two driveways that one serves a motel and a insurance agency, and the other serves Ulster Savings Bank. It's TAP eligible because most of the work gets done relative to pedestrian safety rather than the signalization benefits. The grant application, I don't know what's in the number. We asked in the other committee that it be amended, the number be amended to $1.8 million versus $1.5. I don't know whether that made it through with the other committee. We asked, we've taken a look at this. We've got some work we have to do in right-of-way acquisition. We also have some work on sidewalks that we have to do, and the signals are getting more and more expensive, and this has a full crosswalk associated with it as well. So I think it raises the total amount to 1.8. I think the county amount is 80% of that, so I think that 360,000, as I recall.
I'm still scrolling through the ARPA resolutions.
You see 1.5 and
you see 1.5.
So this was amended in
economic development.
That's my thought, that it's not as presented, because apparently didn't make it through to this committee to be in our packet that way. But I don't think we need to amend it again because it already has that amendment.
Okay.
So I would make the motion that we accept, that we adopt this resolution as it comes to us from economic development.
Okay. Do I hear a second on that?
Dennis, who's doing the work?
I'm sorry?
Who's doing the work?
We don't know yet. We do have some drawings that were done by Craig Manning Engineering. They had done the signalization study back in 2009 or 10. So we asked them if they would draw something up, and they did. So we would go out to bid for the work, so we don't know yet who will do the work. You're not involved at this particular point in time.
Thank you.
Okay. So you're comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'll second the amendment.
Second the amendment? Okay. So,
I guess we're amending our motions to reflect the fact that it's an amended resolution presented to us.
Very good. Okay. So resolution 696, as we already voted on the amendment. Okay. As presented.
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Resolution number 697, approving the execution of a contract for $98,574,000 entered into by the county with Fitzgerald and Halliday, Inc. Motion for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second. Sure. Any questions? Legislator Erna.
Thank you. So, looks here like we're going to pay for this Ulster County Transportation Council study, and I just wanted to go back and see any history of us having done that. I did see at the beginning of last year where we had have this 10-year funding FHWA, FTA, and the county match for this year and for next year.
I see $32,567 is the amount we're matching. That is this going to contribute toward or come from that? And if not, I guess what's the deal here? I didn't see any other UCTC legislation that this body has funded in basically the whole history of our online record of it.
So I can answer that question. UCTC receives an allocation of funding from the federal government on an annualized basis. That allocation of federal government is then moved through a unified planning work program. The county has a host agreement, essentially with the UCTC to have the planning board act as host. That agreement was approved by all of the participating communities in the county, which are the urbanized area in the county. We then go through something called a unified planning work program discussion on an annualized basis, and we put programs into that funding. The money that is available for actually paying for these is put into the county planning department's budget as professional services, and then it's reimbursed at the federal level. When we do consulting work, the reimbursement is 100% of federal dollars because we use the matching money from the staff work that are already there to match the federal requirements. So it's 95% federal, 5% county match generally. But for consulting projects, we use the staff time to essentially make that match. So it's 100% federal dollars will actually be paid. Every dollar we pay this consultant will request reimbursement from NYSDOT for that particular work.
Thank you. And this says it's for public engagement, graphic design, and website development?
That's correct. This is the county has, the Transportation Council has a responsibility under its federal requirements to update its long-range transportation plan every 5 years. We're now on a five-year update that has to be done and completed by the end of September, which is the start of the next fiscal year. So we're in a bit of a rush to essentially make this update work. And the public will write most of the plan in house, but the public outreach work and all the graphic design work and website development will be done by this consultant.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Yeah.
Next, we have, okay. Resolution number 702, establishing a restricted capital reserve fund, decarbonization capital reserve under section 6D of the New York State General Municipal Law. Motion for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second. Thank you. Chair Bartels.
So this is the other restricted reserve fund. This is the decarbonization fund that Executive Metzger brought forward through executive budget, then the budget that we approved includes this as contemplated. This is the action to actually make it real. There was a minor amendment made in environment, minor but significant, two words. The draft I have in front of me is pre-amendment, but I'm sure it's updated in the system. It was to in one of the resolves to finance design, construction, reconstruction, or acquisition only for the purpose of capital projects that improve energy efficiency in county, capital C, county buildings. That was approved in energy and environment. So when we vote on it, we'll be voting on it with that amendment. There was discussion in environment led by Legislator Maloney to look to have a clawback should a capital project that received funding that used the decarb fund to do a more efficient system eventually not be a county property anymore, that money come back into the fund. The attorneys looked to make that amendment, but there were challenges given that these funds are created by state legislation and monies in and out of the funds require legislative approval. So to pass a policy requiring clawback go into the fund would be it's unexecutable because the body would have to actually put the money in the fund. You can't just make a policy that it shall be so. So I spoke with Legislator Maloney today, and he understood that and said he didn't want to keep it from moving. Mm-hmm. So
but is it something as we move forward and do start approving these, you know, projects that it could be put into the project?
I don't think you could put it into the project in relation to putting it back into a restricted reserve fund because, again, the restricted the dollars coming in and out of restricted reserve funds require legislative approval. So you can't create a policy requiring that either the same legislative body or another legislative body do something because that legislative body or the same legislative body isn't bound to do what you're creating a policy saying is going to be done. I mean, I would also point out that to whatever extent you're treating, and I actually had this conversation a bit with Legislator Miller, that you're treating, in contemplating that, you're treating projects, I'm just going to call them greener for the sake of simplicity right now, differently than you would be treating other projects that aren't so green. For example, you could argue that a new boiler improves the value of a building even if it is a traditional boiler. We've long argued, why are we putting these, you know, terrible fossil fuel antiquated systems when we should be greening, and that's what this contemplates, so that we don't have an excuse. So there's money to say, you know what, that's more expensive. We're going to use the decarb fund to do the greener thing. But if the argument is that the improvement, which changes the value of the capital itself, would need to be clawed back if the capital no longer became a county-owned property, that would apply to any capital improvement, whatever you did, a traditional asphalt versus an alternative, a traditional roof versus a solar or a green roof. Mm-hmm. It all changes the value of the underlying property. So, again, that's a much more complicated conversation for the next body. But the brief takeaway, which Legislator Maloney understood and said he didn't want to hold this for, is that we functionally can't create a specific clawback in any way that's actually binding or meaningful, and that's without the complicated accounting issues that came into effect, which I'm not even going to go into right now, because again, once we realized we couldn't pass a meaningful policy that, it's not even that it wouldn't have teeth, it's completely not binding.
I do appreciate the intent, though, yeah. Because we've had several buildings that we came into possession of, that we did some repairs to, or maintenance on, and then with the intent of selling them. And I believe there's even a building that I always thought we had owned, but that's USITA owns, and yet we've been providing maintenance on that. So I can see the intent.
If I may, but future. what you're articulating is that intent isn't specific to green infrastructure. It's not anything. So again, for the next legislature to contemplate, but on a project by project basis, really.
Legislator Litz.
I'm a little confused and conflicted. We're going to create a capital reserve fund for green initiatives. But within that fund, it says that the boiler that you want to upgrade, that's green. If the steel comes from a country.
That's for Legislator Erner's amendment, which we're not talking about yet. That's an amendment.
Proposed amendment.
In here.
But that's not it's not on the table yet because it hasn't been moved yet.
How do we introduce this one? Because this is a proposed amendment by someone. Legislator Erner, so I guess.
I think we could move it for discussion. As a sponsor, I would have to consent to it, and I'll talk about that because I have real concerns. But Legislator and I haven't been able to speak. So if you want to move the amendment for discussion, which is what Legislator Litz is speaking. speaking to. We're not talking as amended. We're not talking about the amendment
yet.
We're just talking about it in its simplest form, in its presented form.
I'll move the amendment for discussion.
Okay. Are you second on that?
I was second for discussion.
So I guess I'll finish what I was saying then.
Okay. You're the second?
Because if you go down, if you go down through this list, it would be very hard pressed to use this money for anything.
I agree.
I mean, we're trying to go to a green fleet, and the green fleet runs on lithium batteries, and it says here, we really shouldn't purchase anything with a lithium battery because the lithium comes from Bolivia. So, and then what do? After you buy one, you do a clawback.
You're talking to the wrong person because I don't support the amendment. You need to talk to Legislator Erner. I agree with you that I appreciate the spirit of the amendment as an ideological amendment, but I think it functionally makes it impossible to fund anything. So, yeah.
Legislator Erner, would you like to respond?
I would. Thank you. Yeah. So in the Environment Committee, it was my first time seeing Resolution 702, and I raised my concerns then when I don't have a vote, but I do have a voice, that we don't define energy efficiency in here, and we don't define clean. So what you see before you and that we're discussing are my proposed definitions of those terms. Now, energy efficiency I took from a straight up, basically that article in Wikipedia, but it matches my own physics training. We could use a different definition of energy efficiency. For example, in the last committee, health, we had a mental health department resolution for the mobile mental health team that has a definition of energy efficiency in energy consuming products, and it refers to federal standards from the Environmental Protection Agency, Department of Energy, and some industrial standards like Energy Star. You know, I'd be open to considering an alternative definition, but I think we need to define that term and know what we're going to be allocating funds for. Colloquially, that I don't think that it's just enough to say more efficient. As far as clean, however, I certainly support the transition away from fossil fuels. However, that is necessary but not sufficient to me to make it clean. So the language before you I've drawn from several sources, most notably this book, Hoodwinked in the Hothouse, Resist False Solutions to Climate Change, which discusses greenwashing and other sorts of things that we would like to say are clean and green, but if you actually look at them in a broader perspective, they are not. And then from this book, The Red Deal, Indigenous Action to Save Our Earth by Red Nation. That's where a lot of the discussion around not exploiting indigenous communities. But to Legislator Litz's point, I think that if we want to use lithium, then we should extract it in a responsible way. For me, that's really a line that I don't want to cross. And I can't endorse us exploiting some other community, especially one that's been exploited already, to just achieve our own climate goals. That's not right. We live in the richest country in the history of the world, where, to be sure, there are great and gross inequities, and there's communities within our county that are environmental justice communities. But to ask them to exploit another community and create an environmental injustice is just out of the question for me. So I'm not saying that the exact language that I have proposed is what I expect everyone to agree on, but I'm hoping to begin that conversation, and I hope that we will come away with a definition of clean that takes these things into account.
Thank you.
So do we want to postpone this so we can come up with a better resolution?
Well, Legislator Nolan and then Chair Bartow.
No, I appreciate the direction and the moral conscience of Legislator Erner on this. At the same time, when we are dealing with a climate emergency, And some of these issues are more than decades or centuries old. So I think we should attend to them, but I don't think we should avoid moving towards these solutions that I think are going to be solved as we go forward, as in order to solve the current problems. And so I think the fossil fuel industry is the first place where we take these actions, and then we move on some of these other valid points. So I would, if the sponsor of the amendment doesn't withdraw the amendment, then I would ask us to call the question and vote it down, because I think it keeps us from doing something that is better than this amendment proposes.
Chair Bartels.
Yeah, and in terms of postponement of the resolution as a whole, I would strongly advise against that. I mean, again, we just passed a budget that contemplates, that essentially approves this, just not functionally in terms of in theory. And if we do postpone it, we're going to be $18 million out of whack with our own fund balance policy. The thing that I would say is,
should never put the cart before the horse.
Well, we didn't. We didn't exactly. I mean, in fact, if we had done it the way you're suggesting, that would have been the cart before the horse, because if we had put this forward to move in advance of the budget, the budget was the place to see where we landed in terms of how much money to put to this, if to put anything to this at all.
You could have passed this to take effect after January 1st and then put it in the budget. But I mean, we're doing here, we have to pass this the budget doesn't balance.
No, the budget balances. The budget balances, just our fund, we're out of whack with our fund balance policy. The budget is balanced. This is a fund balance issue. We have $18 million in excess fund balance in terms of our own fund balance policy, which requires us to be within a range of restricted funds, not assigned funds.
But we could put that towards housing.
No, we can't, because there's not a mechanism right now to put it for housing in a restricted manner, unless you're actually going to fund housing. The housing, the resolution related to housing is an assignment, not a restriction, which is very different both in terms of accounting and in terms of our fund balance policy. An assignment can be changed by legislative action, by a mere vote. An assignment is a reflection of intention. A restriction is a restriction that requires legislative action in or out. You know, I would also say that Executive Action 1, which had to do with climate initiatives and an aggressive move toward complying with CLCPR 70% by 30, like, this is one self-imposed mechanism to reach it. These were funds that will go toward capital improvements for the county, just arguably improvements that are other than the standard fossil fuel improvements. And we've long complained that the standard fossil fuel improvements come to us at a late hour when there's no other option. So this provides us with a means of saying there is actually the funding to do something that's a little more expensive, but better in helping us reach our goals of 70 by 30. And that's just one aspect of it. I'm sure the deputy county executive can speak to it as well. Through the chair, if that's something the committee wants to hear, because again, this came from Executive Metzger initially, but I'm in strong support of it.
Well, I'll give the floor to Legislator Litz, but I also had a question. I mean, there's a motion for an amendment, but if the sponsor is not accepting it, then we would have to move the resolution forward as it's presented. Legislator Litz?
I can understand where Phil's coming from, because we're saying, all right, we have a climate issue. We need to be more green, more energy efficient. If you have a boiler that operates at 30% efficiency, it's not clean, it's not efficient. But if you put one in that's 35%, it would qualify for this money because it's better than what you had. We should be striving to get the best, and I like the idea of having some sort of a value in there that the efficiency has to be 50% greater than the existing, or to put a definition of clean is very difficult also, but this fund is set up that if you're marginally better than something that's real bad, it qualifies.
Legislator Nolan?
But sometimes that's the only thing that's available, is something that's 5% better. So, I agree with the direction, and I think that this is the direction of the entire government of Ulster County. But trying to specify it in a document like this causes us to trip over things, because it's trying to anticipate, or in order to be helpful, it would have to anticipate a whole range of problems that we can't fully anticipate. So I think the idea of having the reserve fund, I'm going to say, is a little bit problematic for me because of this, but it does set that intention. And then I think we're going to have to look at each of the individual things and work as we go forward, where we can dive down into it. And there might be something where we really, just can't, again, as a matter of conscience, agree to something that seems to be greener. Or we might approve something that's only 5% better because we're losing that boiler and have to replace it, and there's only something 5% better, and we would still be able to pay for it.
Which I believe we brought up, and it wouldn't be efficient enough to provide the heat that we needed for that building.
Well, then we shouldn't use it either.
Yes.
Thank you. The intent here really is not for those minimal gain projects for energy efficiency. Energy efficiency really is just doing the same work or producing the same result with using less energy input. And certainly also in this resolution where we're talking about clean, and it's titled the Decarbonization Capital Reserve, we're looking at not minimally more efficient with an existing fossil technology. But this is really for projects where you're kind of making the leap from a traditional fossil-based system to a cleaner, renewable energy-based. That could be solar, PV, electric, geothermal, etc. So this is not for the kind of incremental and more standard projects, but for a bigger leap forward. And also, I just wanted to state that we are using a special tracking system. The platform is called GRITS, so that we can actually quantify those improvements over time, so that there's reporting and feedback on the energy efficiency gains, and also the carbon emissions reductions by going to the clean energy solutions.
I just think we could come up with a better resolution. I mean, even if you put a GRITS number in there, has to improve the GRITS number by 20 or whatever, something that's quantifiable. I mean, this is like, oh, we're going to do better. Let's do better. I mean, even with our fleet policy, by such and such a date, we're going to have a certain percentage of vehicles. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Quantifiable, measurable. This is not quantifiable or measurable. I think we can do a lot better building a resolution than accepting a minimal resolution.
Or should we let?
Can I just respond to that first? So, I mean, again, I would remind my colleagues that once this creates the restriction, but every project comes before you. Anytime money comes out of here, you're going to vote on it. So excuse my colloquialism, but if some crappy project that barely makes a dent in the environmental initiative comes before you, and I have all assurances that those of you who are still here are going to say, you're replacing it with a boiler that went from 30% efficiency to 35% and still fossil fuel, you're going to say, no, we're not going to use this fund for that. That's where the fail-safe is. It's on all of you to say no. And that's a very strong fail-safe. That's the power of restriction, is that the legislature now, you're locking this money in a fund that you have the say every time any money comes out of it. Not a threshold, not 50,000, any money comes out of it. It's huge.
Trustee LaValle? Legislator Erner.
Thanks. I mean, Legislator Litz mostly made my point before, but just to reiterate, we ought to specify more what this is for. That was my point and the example I offered, and I would appreciate more time. I know I won't be here for much more time, so it could be up to the next legislature. I say take a month, do this in January or February, create a whole policy that says what efficient is, says what clean is, if that, to the extent that's possible, say what the intention is for the use of these funds, things that are quantifiable and measurable, as Legislator Litz said. You don't have to specify it in to the utmost detail, but I expect more from this body that's a policy-making body to say this is the policy that we are following in, this is the intention for these funds, not just decarbonization broadly, whatever that means. That literally just means less fossil fuel. Well, there's a lot more to it than that. There's a lot more to it than that, and I don't know. I would not like to support this tonight, so that's just where I'm at.
Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, so I believe that decarbonization, even if it is just less fossil fuel, is worth doing. And so, and I believe we can make this tighter if it, we begin to think about it and say that it should only be for, you know, things that are wind and nothing else, then we could make that. I think that this is the right amount of specification for what we know about what we want to do. So I think we should rule the proposed amendment out of order for lack of sponsor's approval and move to a vote.
Well, if a motion was made and seconded for an amendment, I don't know if you have to have the sponsor's approval.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Wait. I don't think we've ever made amendments without the sponsor's approval.
No. People have amended my resolutions by committee.
Without asking you?
Exactly.
Robert's rules of order, the amendment should be voted on by the committee.
No, I'm sorry. I'll read you the resolutions may be amended in any committee by a vote of the majority of the total members such committee, so long as the sponsor, if present, does not object.
So it might have been if you weren't present.
Yeah.
If you're not present, it can be amended without your consent, mm-hmm. but then overruled.
So you got to go to all those meetings.
Call the question.
Okay. So I will call the vote. I'm sorry.
Further discussion.
And we can't call the amendment.
There's a significant amount of energy consumption review that goes on primarily through the Department of the Environment in an annual benchmarking review of all the utility bills, along with looking at the project proposals in order to get to our goals of reducing our fossil fuel consumption. I think this is something that we could entirely bring a team together from the county executive side and from operations side to look at some structure around exactly what some goals should be, and also additional language regarding what types of projects and what are the minimum thresholds, and also how would we be tracking it and reporting back to you on the progress of those projects once implemented.
And that's the work that should go in before we come to a resolution.
So on resolution 702, as originally presented, and I believe that's the sixth whereas, has said acquisition of type of capital improvement or the acquisition type of equipment. That's been the only one authorized by the sponsor.
What did you just say? The
sixth whereas? Yeah, it's a sixth whereas. Is that the only amendments that you've authorized, or that were?
We didn't amend a whereas. We amended a resolved. I think it was the fifth resolved.
Okay.
And it said to finance resolved monies in the fund may be appropriate to finance design, construction, reconstruction, or acquisition only the word only, for the purpose of capital projects and improved energy efficiency in county with capital C building.
Okay.
That's going on memory. I don't have it in front of me.
I see it. Okay.
That's going on memory.
So who made this change then?
I can't see. Could someone send me the, pass me that copy?
Sure.
Thanks.
Because there's a lot of changes that are made.
There are.
I'd like to know what we're voting on.
Yeah, I think the six whereas also had slight changes to it, too. Is that one yours?
So, no, those are all bills. The ones that are on the table. I can reprint some.
Yeah,
can you do that, please?
Yeah,
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I don't recognize any of that.
So could we suspend discussion on this? I had invited, we have a new deputy director from UCAT, and I kind of blew right past him. I know he went out of his way to be here tonight, and I should have put you on at 6 o'clock. I apologize. It must have been a pizza. But if we could do that while we're having some copies made. Paula, did you want
to... This is what, 733?
Mm-hmm. The resolution is 702.
Pause consideration.
Yeah, we'll pause consideration, and we'll introduce the new deputy. You can.
Gotcha. So, I'm Paula, public transit coordinator, and this is Scott. He is the new deputy over at UCAT.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I don't know if anybody knows, this is Tony Trocher. He's also the deputy at UCAT.
I'm like 4 weeks newer than all of them. Determined in our department.
Awesome. And I've
welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here. Appreciate that.
22 years. So.
Wow. Thanks.
Thank you. Thick and thin.
Yes.
New electric buses and anything would you like to say anything else? I mean, it's my understanding that you are on the City of Kingston Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee? No?
Okay. I'm on the Kingston Local Development Corporation. I was appointed by Mayor Noble, treasurer of that committee. I spent the last almost 17 years with Ulster Savings Bank. Beautiful career at Ulster Savings. It treated me like gold. Allowed me to treat my community like gold, and I'm so blessed to be here at UCAT. It's been a wonderful fit so far. I could not be happier, so thank you.
Well, that's good to hear. Thank you.
Laura, I do ride a bicycle quite a bit. as far as on any committees, I'm not related to that. I used to be on the Complete Streets Advisory Council.
Oh, maybe it was that
in
one.
The city?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. And thank you for...
I coach a lot of basketball.
While riding a bike on the streets again, yeah,
all the time, as much as I can get.
So, if we have a UCAT resolutions, I would suggest that we maybe get to them immediately following our resolution of 702. Are there a lot of them?
I don't see a UCAT.
I'm just trying to remember if we had any or not. I don't.
Is that on the Department of Public Transit?
Well, the level of service policy.
Okay.
Is it just one?
No, I've never done this. Are we able to pause this resolution that we're on and we'll bring it back to the
table?
Or should we wait?
Well, is there a timeline on that? Because I planned on leaving after my resolution too. You're not going to push it to the end, are you?
No.
No.
Like, I have to get home for childcare.
If you're getting hungry, you can have some pizza.
No, I'm not angry. I'm waiting for me at
home. Okay.
Pizza's been blamed for many problems. Now it's solving problems.
Yeah, we do have a quote.
Do you have taking notes?
Yeah. I don't think that's going to work.
Okay. I mean, I'd like to...
Laura, thank you.
Can I ask my questions?
Yes.
We're not going to go to that resolution?
Can we pull the resolution forward and we can incorporate that into discussion?
Okay, I was just suggesting once we finish up with 702.
Okay. Nice smiley face. Okay, let's go on.
I think we can finish up 702 and then go to... which I guess is the next one anyway.
Sorry. Oh, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Happy, yeah.
Thank you.
The logic of pizza is becoming apparent. And can we ask the clerk to explain what has been distributed?
Okay, so 702, this is as presented by the sponsor in its current form. Do you need a moment to read through?
Mm-hmm. No, this is what's online for the resolution, right?
Yeah, that's what was. That's the amendment that was passed out of environment, presented by legislative law.
So. So we haven't called the question, so it just the continued discussion. I mean, I'm not going to support this right now, but I'd like to be able to support it on the floor. So I would welcome Chair Bartels and any other supporters into a conversation about some of what I've presented tonight, and hope perhaps we can look to a floor amendment that would meet some of my concerns.
Chair Bartels?
Yeah, and I would, based on what Deputy Executive Laval said, I would think to engage the executive side of the House if there's anything that could, any language that, again, this is similar to the other resolution in that these funds are created pursuant to state enabling legislation. You can't just create any reserve fund, which is why I responded so quickly related to housing in terms of restricted reserve funds. So we want to make that connection between operations and policy initiatives and what's allowable in the enabling. But I think that's I appreciate the willingness to have that conversation between now and the floor vote, because I do think it's really critical that we take this first step, and I appreciate the executive proposing this, and I also have faith in the legislature to look to each project that's presented and determine whether or not it's worthy of this. But I appreciate Legislator Erner's urgency and want to have more specifics delineated up front, and so hopefully between now and then there could be something that could get Legislator Erner to support this, but I appreciate the willingness to vote on it now to get us to the floor. And we'll have the conversations between now and then with you and with the executive staff.
We still have a week.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to call the vote on the resolutions presented by the sponsor. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any extensions?
What is Legislator Lips's vote?
I know. The fund is created in accord with the established for the decarbonization plan. We have a plan?
Deputy
LaValle? I'll vote yes. I mean, we'll get it out on the floor, but I'll be honest with you. You know, the resolution is sort of half-baked. We should have done a better job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, on to resolution number 733, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with New York State Department of Transportation to accept New York State funds for Ulster and Dutchess County Transit Service. Motion for discussion.
I move.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair Bartel. My question would be, the links right now go to the Loop Bus in Dutchess and UCAT to Poughkeepsie. Is there any consideration of it going over the Rhinecrest Bridge?
I can answer some of that question.
Okay, thank you.
The short answer is this funding is not provided.
Okay. So this is very specified. Okay.
I thought there was some discussion in past meetings that there is a bus that goes over to, will possibly go into Bard and to the train station in fact.
The county is engaged in terms of doing a revitalization work, and mm-hmm. that discussion will probably come up in that particular vein.
Legislator Erman.
Thanks. Can anyone comment on the Schedule B SA2 basis for compensation? It predicts the total operating cost, and then it farebox and STOA, and I guess the county's paying the farebox share at this point right now, but any changes to that based on our on that change?
In terms of the method?
Or the impact?
I guess if there's no change with respect to the method.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? So Legislator Erner, we were, I know we're kind of like moving in and out of resolutions, but did you want to ask any further questions of you got personnel while they're here?
Yeah, thanks.
So we can let them go and have more pizza. Okay, thank you.
Over the past couple of months, I've asked the following questions by email, so since I haven't gotten answers, I'm going to ask them now. I've heard that the both the buses that go over to Mid-Hudson Bridge can actually, on request, go to Milton. How is that advertised, and is a plan in place to restore service the rest of the way down to Marlboro Hamlet?
I can answer. We did in the past go down to Marlboro. We have not. We have stopped that. I want to say when we changed a couple of routes when Lauren was in charge. So we no longer go down to Marlboro unless it is for the rural route shopping bus. We do. But as a daily route, we do not.
Can you just verify, so sometime last year you're saying, as recently as last year, the bus still went to Marlboro Hamlet?
We had a route that went down to the bank there in Marlboro and turned around.
Okay, I didn't realize it lasted that recently. I'd heard otherwise, but okay. So you mentioned the rural route and the shopping bus. Where do those schedules appear on website, social media, or the app?
I don't believe it's out other than on the schedule that says shopping bus call for information. And we do have the seniors that do call and request, and we do have riders that are down there that take it on a weekly basis.
Okay. Thank you. Does UCAT see the function of dispatch as principally to make special arrangements and report problems? I wonder why. What's the difference between dispatch and scheduling? And how do you gather rider feedback when you post on Facebook, for example, UPL will cover the College Link, and the public says, what about the usual frequency for the College Link? Whose job is it to do those communications? I know that was a couple questions.
That was, yes. So let's back up. The difference between scheduling and
dispatch.
Dispatch, thank you. Dispatch is watching the movement of the vehicles, taking all calls that are coming in, asking for requests to let the vehicle know, the bus route know when's the next bus. And where is the bus located? As opposed to scheduling, someone that sets up the information, rides of, say, paratransit, rural route, passengers, they do that portion. It's entered into the system through them. And I'm sorry, what was your other question?
When UCAT posts on Facebook, for example, the UPL route will cover the CL route. And somebody in the public writes back, what will it cover, the regular frequency of the CL, or is it just going to do the UPL's frequency? Because they're not the same frequencies. Whose job is it to communicate all of that from your end?
So every post has, please contact dispatch for any further questions or any specifics. We try not to get too in-depth conversationally on Facebook. Try to give general information with an avenue to ask any specific questions anybody may need to have answered via our dispatch. If often, they take hundreds of calls a day doing just that.
I could comment about, you know, whenever the, typically whenever we have staffing issues, Phil, that's whenever the NPL route will be discontinued for the day, so if we don't have staff to cover it. That route has coverage on the CL and the UPL, you know, and they overlap in those areas. It's not going to assume the schedule of the NPL. It's going to be whatever the CL and the UPL schedule is.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's actually a good point. When I've seen it posted that it's being canceled, yeah. I don't know if I always see the alternative on there. Am I missing it?
We've been putting the schedule.
You have been putting it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd say the last month and a half.
Okay.
We've been doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great idea. This way it doesn't
because
work.
Because
like
it
was no service, yeah. There's alternative. Okay.
And I think our goal is to increase the amount of visibility there because people use Facebook. You know, quite a bit to learn about, you know, route cancellations and things like that. That is now linked on our main website because there was a complaint that, you know, a lot of people don't use Facebook, and so now the two are mirrored.
Great.
And, you know, I think one of the things additionally is that we, through the software that we currently use, I think that we're looking at text-based notifications as well because we think that, you know, there's people that we're not reaching. We'd like to do that. Those are all goals of ours.
Great. Okay. Can we talk about bus shelters for a second? Is UCAT working with planning to overcome the municipalities, what I've heard is their resistance to the maintenance and advance the construction? And can we use our connections with New York State Department of Transportation through the planning department to speed up erection of both signs and shelters on state roads?
I think I was deferred to Jeffrey Lavalle on
that. Roger has been working with communication to the municipalities specifically about shelters and what they'd be willing to kind of regarding maintenance or upkeep of their shelters, how they would be willing to participate in that. And we talked about various ways of also getting out in front of the supervisors to hear from them directly as far as kind of any concerns or thoughts or preferences they would have going forward. But I recently have talked to Director Roser about that.
Any sense of a timeline since we funded this in last year's budget?
We're looking at when the next meetings are for the mayors and supervisors to make sure that we get to talk.
Can you speak about driver positions? Any vacancies remaining? Are we fulfilling the minimum promised services with the current staffing levels and any plans for new hires to fill schedule gaps, such as with meal breaks? I did hear one about the from a paratransit rider that they're now able to get service at a time they couldn't before, so thank you for that.
So
we're in the process of hiring a new part-timer. We just interviewed.
We do not have all our full-time is covered, and I want to say maybe two of the part-time positions, and we did just recently interview two people, and we were making this decision when we spoke with Tony Rozier about it, which will be possibly tomorrow.
Great.
So we're hoping to fill those as well.
Two vacant
part-time. Opposed to the 7 full-time that we did just have. Getting better.
Great. Back to New Paltz for a moment. It seems to me, but perhaps you could verify that the New Paltz loop gets canceled more often than a lot of other routes. If that's true, does that have anything to do with the withdrawal of contributions from the students? And if so, are we talking with them and trying to get that back?
It has nothing to do with contributions. It has to do with logistics of coverage and overall ridership. Take it for what it's worth, it's not the most actively ridden route, and it's got some of the most overlap. So when we're forced to pull from somewhere to cover somewhere else, logistically speaking, it makes the most sense because it can be covered by, Scott said before, some other routes that cover the same geographical area. We never want to cover it, and it's I'm sure it's always the same message on Facebook, so it looks, the optic of it is, why is it always this, why is it always this, why? And it tends to be that because if we have to pull from somewhere, we pull from there for those factors. It's the most overlap, and from a statistical standpoint, it's not our most ridden.
And just to touch base on that, you basically have New Paltz here, and that bus just goes around into this area. There's the one that goes into Kingston, which CCL does cover. And if anyone is in the area needing to get to store, you have the UPL that runs through there and the CLW that runs through there. So it's covered in either direction.
Except not on Du Bois. Some of the side trips are not covered, right?
It's not 100% mirrored. Not 100% mirrored.
But I appreciate the, you know, trying to eliminate redundancies of something we've been talking about for a while.
Especially if they're short-staffed. At least they're not totally eliminating the area. So people still have some sort of transportation that's reliable.
Okay. I want to ask you about special event buses. What kind of organization can request a special event bus, and how do they do that?
Well, theoretically, any organization can request it. As far as approval goes, we typically defer to executive if there's a question. If it's community-oriented, housed in Kingston, from my short tenure here, Phil, it's things like the Italian Festival, 4th of July, they seem to be historically what we've covered. If there's any kind of question, I typically defer to Tony, and Tony defers upwards.
Solidarity ride for victim related. So it's a variety of events, not just theirs.
How do you promote that around the county so that folks know, hey, you can request UCAT to take people to your event?
Really, who is requesting, they are the ones that puts it out there for the public.
It's aware of this.
Right.
The tourism is aware of this. For the event, we can look at the tourism.
We never put that event. All right, I guess we couldn't, though. We discussed putting some money in a budget line in tourism for event buses, but I think we were told that using public buses for events and us paying,
right.
There was some reason why we couldn't do it.
Can't do it as a charter service. That's
mm-hmm. That's what it was.
On the senior transportation page, it still lists something about fares, but so it would seem that needs updating as regular bus routes are now fare free.
Okay.
Do seniors have any additional options for shopping trips? And maybe you can't speak to this, it's Office for the Aging, but is the Office for the Aging medical van option, does that remain the same as is described there?
Well, I did, but you just put two again, and I can only answer one at a time. So
sorry,
just,
Paula.
That's fine. Just repeat it again. I'm sorry.
Sure. Do seniors have any additional options for shopping trips besides described on that page?
They have two medical and one shopping that they can do a week. And as far as the funds, they still can give us donations, and those donations are dropped off weekly to OFA.
Okay. Thank you. Where are you at with the plan to spend the about $500,000 revenue from the non-county source? I can't remember what it is. At a recent committee, Director Roser had said that UCAT could use it to pay or hire more drivers. Do you know the funds I'm talking about?
I do not.
That's okay.
Hopefully it's more than $500,000. That's a drop in the bucket in terms of money they need.
You mentioned possible text. I'm glad you're thinking about different ways to communicate with folks. I've heard requests that the dispatch phone line, when someone isn't able to pick it up, have an automatic message that will inform callers of service changes, anything that's known about at that moment. And people have told me that it'll say UCAT's operating on a regular schedule.
Yeah,
that's not the case.
Yeah, you're right, and that that's on a very short list of things to be updated. We're going to go to a more generalized message. Keeping that updated in real time is something we'd like to do, but the generalistic message needs to be a little more generic for now until we can put in a system to list each and every service interruption update. That would require quite a lot of upkeep on the answering system, but I 100% agree that that needs to be revamped and is on the short list of things to have.
Right on. Along with the text alerts, if there's an option for an automatic phone call, just any other things like that, that would be great. Recently, there was a bus shelter with a smashed glass pane that a constituent brought to my attention in my district. At that point, I assume it's not really the county's responsibility, but do you know if it would have been the municipality's or the property owner's responsibility?
I don't
know the contract.
So, past agreements that we've had with respect to bus shelters basically put the onus on either the municipality that requested the shelter or the property owner that had a shelter requirement and as part of its site plan approval or some of the other approvals that are given out. That's where the onus went. The onus never went back to the county in terms of maintenance of these facilities.
Okay. All right.
If there's some exceptions, obviously the college, for example, would be an exception. We have those facilities where they're on county property.
Okay, so I'd like to move forward with the rest of the meeting, or are you almost at the end of here?
Have these two.
Just two more? Okay.
All right, and this next one is a group, but why don't I just summarize? It's about the new social service bus route T. Can we hear an update about how that's going and if the general public can ride, and whether you need appointments, if you're getting close? When Tripathi, you and I met with Deputy LaValle and Director Roser, we heard that it's still in trial phase, and like eventually you'll publish the information about it. Mm-hmm. Where are we at with that?
Anyone talk to that?
So ridership is increasing on it. We are getting a lot of riders that are coming from the budget 19 down. I think it's budget 19. Is that what it's called? Okay. And we don't deny them. So if they're in a safe location to stand and they're flagging the bus down, they do pick them up and they take them down to the plaza. They don't take them further than that. The route for the T is from the Kingston Village Motel to the plaza. So if they're in that route, they are picking them up and dropping them off.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
And there is
such
more ridership
to walk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And then the last question is about some service in the town of Ulster that I've heard reports that it's changed a little bit at Ulster Gardens, where passengers have to get on board in just one place. and the riders just wanted to know why it changed and if that would continue that way. And they said sometimes areas along Enterprise Drive and other areas west of 9W where they were used to stopping, they're not able to board or alight there anymore. For example, at the Stewart's, Walmart's not on that side, so that must be a mistake. But can you confirm the reason for any of those changes, if they're temporary or permanent?
I'm not aware of that.
I saw people waiting for a bus in front of Mid-Hudson, which is right by Stewart's.
Yeah.
As long as they're going in the right direction, it typically shouldn't be a problem. So.
And it's a safe location.
Yeah.
That is one of the charges of the drivers, that they're not allowed to stop at an unsafe location. And there are some, you know, where there's not ample room for them to cars to go around. But typically, you know, if you're on, it's a flag stop system, so they're going to pick you up.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for sitting at the meeting. Okay. On to resolution number 734, approving the execution of a contract for $154,303.56 entered into by the county with Samsara Inc. Motion for discussion. Nolan, second. Legislator Erner. Any discussion on this? Legislator Erner.
So is this for replacement software as well as hardware?
I can talk about it. So the Samsara system is a system that allows us to keep track of our vehicles. It allows us to take front and rear, you know, camera footage. That's used for safety. That's used for, you know, training opportunities for drivers.
Yeah.
It also does diagnostics live, and so it's plugged into the vehicle itself. And will allow, you know, dispatch to see, you know, if that vehicle has a problem, they can immediately say, hey, you've got a problem, we need to route a new driver there. So it's used for a lot of things. And the maintenance, Bill Califano, he's a big proponent of it. It saved him a lot of, you know, a lot of time. It saved a lot of mechanical time. It's also saved, you know, towing time. So, you know, when you want to talk about the cost of towing a bus, it's a lot. And so this has become, you know, something that I think that we're going to rely on in the future a lot more. So it's real-time diagnostics and safety.
Thank you.
So that's what it does. And yes, it is hardware-based. It's hardware. It's got a cell, you know, cell chip in it. So each, you know, your device is mounted on a bus and wired in.
Any other questions?
Nope.
Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Next, I would like to offer to block these three leases, Resolution 735, 736, and 737.
A second on the move to block.
Thank you. And vote on the block. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Discussion on these resolutions?
Nope.
Hearing none, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Next, I would like to block resolution number 738 and 739, which are easement agreements. Second on the block. Legislator Erna. Vote on it. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
You made the motion to block it. Now you have a question about the block.
Okay. Now on the discussion. Thank you.
Okay. I'm cool with the block.
Okay. On the resolution.
Okay. Thank you. Why? Couple things. Looking at the Central Hudson one for, well, okay, I'll start with what they have in common. What they have in common is this $1 and other valuable considerations.
Yeah.
Why don't we charge money for letting the power company come through our property?
While real experts are engaged elsewhere, generally,
He took his pizza and left.
Oh, so we're not getting that answer at all. It's common to have a nominal fee when there's a community good served by this type of contract. And so it could be with a nonprofit organization, and in this case with a utility. And so there's an assumption here of the mutual benefit, and therefore the county not deriving financial benefit from the arrangement, and also not falling into the difficulty of an unconstitutional gift to an individual or a business that would be engaged in a for-profit activity. So that's the general framework under which an offer of $1 in consideration would seal a contract. You have to have some consideration for the contract to be valid, mm-hmm. something that is given. And so a dollar is a traditional, conventional, legal ruse to meet that requirement for a consideration.
As far as the amount goes, I guess that all depends. There's no real financial gain here like there was when we were moving in a piece of property over to a private home, a private business organization, whatever. I had objected when I worked for a municipality where there was a significant area. You know, they wanted an additional 20 feet through Central Hudson. But we're talking like 189 acres, so along that whole bottom of our footprint. So we did ask, and I think we received something like 5,000. This is, and I had run it past the town of Asoka supervisor, at least with ours, and it's really such a minimum amount as far as the parcel, and there's no other impacts.
And I didn't say, but you're reminding me that in many of these cases, the cost of actually valuing the interaction would be more than the value. So it becomes one of those situations where you could pay $10,000 for a $1,000 contract. And so both parties lose and the public doesn't gain by trying to put an exact valuation on it.
Any other questions?
I mean, I assume that the Thruway Authority is asking us to move it for a reason. I mean, I just don't have the information I need here around that either, but I'm still this, you know, billion-dollar company.
The
Director of Association has an answer. The Central Hudson easement, relocate the pole in order to the Thruway Bridgeport. They need to relocate their pole outside of the state right away on 213 on the frontage of the
And it appears that that's the same type of situation with Resolution 739. I apologize, I don't know for sure, even though that's in Shandaken. But I do know that firehouse, and that explanation sounds reasonable. It's a very tight fit there.
There's an explanation here if you want to see it. It's a firehouse, you're right. Easement right of way extends more than the
Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Resolution number 740, establishing a capital project number 679 for the replacement of Hurley Mountain Road Bridge, authorizing implementation and funding of costs exceeding federal and or state aid reimbursements, amending the capital fund budget. Motion for discussion. Thank you, Nolan. Second. Thank you. Legislator Erner. Is this a full replacement? I feel like we're always working on this bridge. So we're just going to replace it and it's going to be done now, right?
This is Canton Bridge, which is the end of Hurley Mountain Road and Songor.
Oh, okay.
It's Bridge to New York Award.
Okay, so it's just a long road with a lot of bridges. Okay. All right. Any other discussion? Legislator Erner.
Thank you. I used to go on that road more often when I lived in Hurley. It's been a minute, but I mean, I know it's a pretty rural area. There's not that much traffic. What plans do we have to accommodate folks not in cars?
It'll have complete streets and phones included.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Any other questions? I don't know if I can call the vote while I'm grabbing a slice of pizza.
It's all right. You're on camera. You can do that.
So if there's no other discussion, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Next resolution is number 742, establishing capital project number 680, replacement of the Gutterbrook Bridge, Town of Hartsburg, and authorizing implementation funding pending reimbursement from federal aid and state program aid eligible costs.
Well, Marchicelli. I'll move it.
Oh, how was that said?
Marchicelli.
Marchicelli, thank you.
Or Marchicelli sometimes.
Nolan, second. Legislator Erner, any discussion on this? Page it would be on. Did you want to have it?
It's not referenced in the packet.
It was referenced in the capital budget, though.
I didn't see.
Director Masterson, is it in our capital budget?
It says number 680. Establishing it.
Yeah.
So this was applied for the TIP back in 2020. We just heard back from the state in August after we made our capital requests.
Okay.
That this is
so that explains it. So we'll have to amend the capital plan for sure. Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. On to resolution number, I think,
744.
Amending the 2024-29 Capital Improvement Program, establishing capital project number 681 at 368 Broadway Fire and Access Control Upgrades. Motion for discussion?
So moved.
Second. And this is on the stabilization center?
Mm-hmm. And that whole property which the county owns?
No discussion? Okay, legislation.
I'd really like to take some time and understand the surveillance needs for the property better, but I have another reason that I am going to vote no tonight, which is the same reason as in the last committee for outside contracts where we don't know the wages that we're paying the contract workers. So for all I know, we're paying them fine, but I'd really like to know, and that's in part, that's really on all of us in the county government, that we aren't getting that information at the moment, and it's on us in the legislature, in my opinion, for not having raised the requirement above $15 an hour, so we really can't have any assurance that folks are making a living wage while they're doing this work for us. So I can't support it tonight.
Legislator Litz.
These are municipal contracts. They have to follow Taylor law, so they're not only making $15 an hour, they're getting union wage, probably $20, $40, $60 an hour.
And this is just on changes to the capital plan. I think it's 746?
Yeah, this is just establishing the capital.
Okay.
I mean, it's a Taylor law project, right?
So, yeah.
So we can vote on this one, and then I guess it would be the next one that would, that's where you're concerned for.
Yeah, both of them, but thanks for that clarification, Legislator Litz.
Okay. Sure.
So on resolution 744, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. I was going to block because these are maintenance, resolution 746 and 747. But are they both for the stabilization center? Or are they two separate? They're two separate contracts.
746 is for the 368
Broadway. Okay. That's all right. So I'll pull that. All right, so I won't block these two. Resolution number 746, approving the execution of contract for $199,610.49 entered into by the contract with Securitas Technology Corp. Motion for discussion.
So.
Second.
Third. Did that, I think it was owner or no one. Any discussion on this? I don't have the backup documentation, but you're saying because it's a larger company, it doesn't typically say what they're paying the technicians.
It doesn't, but I mean, I take Legislator Litz's point that it is likely that they're making more than some of the lower end workforce that we employ through contracts. I still have the same concern over surveillance state on this, so I'll be a no for that reason.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Resolution number 747, approving the execution of a contract for $135,000 entered into by the county with Dutchess Tech-On Industries.
We'll move it.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan, second. Sorry. Legislator Litz. Discussion. Legislator?
Well, sure. I'll say thanks because we do have labor rates here provided. I see 96 to 192, depending on the time of the week, and for one of the years, and then it went up to 198, 196 per hour. It doesn't tell us that that's the amount that the worker makes, but I'm going to guess that they're making decent wages.
Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Since these are maintenance contracts too, Econ Services and Gotham Refining, are they very similar? Yeah. Okay, so I'll take a motion to block resolution 748 and 749.
Motion to block.
Thank you. Second.
Second.
On the block, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. And discussion on the block on the resolutions.
748 and 749, right?
Yeah, it's Encon Services and Supply and Gotham Refining Chemical Corp.
So. Thank you. So I see we have emergency repair rates per hour, and then the rest for preventative, that's just, they're going to set their schedule, and it looks like that's just what they'll charge us. There's not going to be extra for preventative.
The preventative maintenance is scheduled. Emergency repair is, and they're all living wage. These are all living wage.
You don't schedule your emergency?
Wouldn't that be nice?
Oh.
But if you schedule your maintenance, maybe you'll have no emergencies, yeah?
There you go.
But Mr. Perry, I'm sorry, can you clarify what you said, though? These are all living wage. What is, do you know what the minimum
for the living wage act?
Park County's living wage act. Okay, which is 15 an hour at the moment.
What? Can I comment? These are all prevailing wage, though.
So okay.
Prevailing wage is much higher than living wage. Yeah.
Can you give a guess ballpark?
For NCON, I would say at least $30 to $40 an hour.
Okay. Now we're talking.
Department of Labor. If you go on the Department of Labor website, you can search Ulster County, and it shows every single wage, prevailing wage, of what they will get paid.
I think the lowest is $25 for construction. It's.
I'm sorry, which website was that where I could check?
Department of Labor.
And State
Department. Yep, you can break it down by county. Yep, every 6 months it gets updated.
And
And how, I'm sorry.
Yes, absolutely.
Can you just clarify how I could have known that, that this would have been subject to that as opposed to, say, a contract with Family Woodstock?
Any service contract is applicable. I don't think professional services like Family Woodstock have to pay for family wage.
Also, any construction project is a prevailing wage.
Yeah. But they do have to pay a living wage. Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Resolution number 750, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $74,064.11 entered into by the county with County Waste and Recycling Services. Motion for discussion? Legislator Nolan? Second by Legislator Litz?
I was scratching my head. Put it into discussion.
Never
really. I just bought the piece of art. I have a question on this.
Absolutely.
So, county waste and recycling, is that single stream or is that dual stream? And if those terms, and can you define what you mean as you answer this question? through the chair to Deputy Executive LaVall.
And I'll speak to this since this did come up at Energy and Environment last past Thursday, and with similar comments and questions from the committee there. So in general, when we're talking about single stream, that is when the service provider, the hauler, picks up commingled and paper in a single container, a single truck, in order to process at a facility that is capable of handling single stream recyclables. Dual stream is when your paper is separated from what's traditionally thought of as commingled recyclables, which are your aluminums, plastic, glass, and the other stream. And again, those are, you have to have trucks that are appropriately set up for collecting those and as well as delivering them to a facility that is set up for processing two streams of recycling. Currently, county waste is collecting and processing all recycling from our buildings in a single stream. So they are using their trucks, which are set up for single stream, taking it to their facility, which is set up for single stream. And that facility is not in Ulster County. Just reminding folks that there is, although the county has flow control for municipal solid waste, it does not have flow control on recycling. So those are materials that can be processed and handled at facilities that are outside of Ulster County. We are interested in, this is a one-year extension on a contract to keep it as is with single stream, but as we look to 2024 for bidding this out, we are going to be looking at how to try to find single stream recycling because it does improve the marketability of the product as far as recyclable materials.
Say that last bit again, if
it
you would.
It improves the...
Which does?
The dual stream.
Okay, great. That's what
The quality and the marketability of the product. And it would be the best way to assure that things are being recycled into their highest and best use and not being landfilled in some other way.
So through the temporary chair, follow-up to the Deputy Executive, I'm glad to hear you say all of that. It confirms what I believe. Do you have any figures on that would help us sort out how much of single stream collected material actually gets recycled at a decent value?
I think we could get some information from County Waste on what they're marketing, how they're recycling it, you know, because they are operating this facility. So we can ask County Waste for some additional information on their reporting on their recycling facility.
So I'd be prepared to support this resolution this year with the provision that we look at trying to move to a dual screen unless we can obtain assurances that single screen accomplishes the type of recycling that we want to do.
The last extension, final.
So it would need to go out to bid again.
Next year.
Great. Great. Okay. Thank you.
That's any other questions?
Yes.
Bill.
Thank you. Do we have these folks' wages?
You're welcome.
It's an extension to it'll that extension of contract amendment language will include all anything that's relevant from the living wage, the county's living wage reporting requirement, just to make sure that that's communicated to the vendor.
This is on county wage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as you were discussing about single stream versus county waste is one of the few haulers that does have a state of the art with an optic sorter up at Port Albany for their commingled. So they are able to put it all on a belt and sort through it. Is it top quality? Probably not. But they are able to separate it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I will call the vote on this. All in favor of Resolution 350?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Are you opposed? Okay. Any abstentions? Thank you. Since these both look like contracts for heating, cooling, mechanical type, I'm going to ask to block 751 and 752.
Motion to block.
Motion to block. Thank you. Second. Slater Erner, on the block, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Discussion on the resolutions. Legislator Erner.
Excuse me, so this looks like it would fall into the prevailing wage category of that, right?
Correct.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Resolution number 753, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $355,600 entered into by the county with the Terry Real Estate LTD.
I'll move
motion
it.
For discussion. Thank you, Legislator Nolan. Second. Legislator Erner. Discussion?
Yeah.
Legislative list.
I remember my recollection that this company has been maintaining the property. And then we had a further resolution, and this company was selected to market the property.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And it was my understanding that when they market the property, they were going to maintain it. Then why are we extending this maintenance contract to pay them to do, get paid twice for one maintenance?
So, I'll start and then Dean Rob. The marketing is distinct from the contract, which is for the property management. The property management is all the interactions with the current tenants, as well as the payments to vendors and other services for the property. So they are two distinct scopes and two distinct contracts. There was significant discussion that was very good regarding how to make sure that we're in a situation where
they're not delaying the marketing so they can get paid money for maintenance, which is
right.
Why we entered into the conversation to the maintenance portion would end at the end of this year, and the marketing contract, once it turned into January would also be doing the maintenance.
What I believe I remember from those conversations is that we would include language in the property management contract that would allow us to be able to terminate and also to be able to make sure that we're moving to a closing. And I want, because you've been working on the contract, to speak to that directly. But I do also just want to update the committee that we have met with the Karen Viteri as the real estate marketer and have, you know, a plan to list it once we go through the first of the year so that it's a fresh listing for 2024 and so that we are moving forward with haste on marketing the property. So you can speak to the language in the contract.
Yes. So the property management contract is an extension. We did put language in there that it is month to month and contingent on the sale. If it goes up, if we have an offer, we will immediately, at the signing of the contract, we'll end the property management contract.
Which sort of looks?
I mean, I voted yes on the resolution because I was told that once the marketing contract kicks in quote, January, about the maintenance would be covered under that, so that if the marketing company was doing the maintenance, it would give them incentive to sell the property because then they wouldn't have to put out the money for the maintenance. But if the maintenance contract is in force, they're getting paid for the maintenance and they're getting paid for the marketing. I believe the resolution was worded that the maintenance portion ends at the end of this year and the maintenance is to be done under the marketing beginning next year.
So, 2 points, if I may, there. One is that in order to do the maintenance, there has to be money in this contract. The marketing contract is a $0. It's for commission.
We negotiated the commission. Correct.
However, this contract, which is the reason why it's certainly the property management fees and $355,000, but that's the anticipated budget, which is shared with committee on a monthly basis to show what's going on with that property. So that's the first. You couldn't really do that under the real estate contract. But just to get to emphasize what Dean had just said was that the minute we sign an accepted offer, that frees the maintenance, that we're no longer paying maintenance. So that's the incentive to close, is that we're no longer paying Viteri the fee for maintenance once we have signed an offer. We've accepted an offer on the building. So once we
why couldn't you include the maintenance in the real estate contract? Because I know people that put their house up and move somewhere, and the real estate company keeps the maintenance up on the house until it's sold.
That would be what kind of,
which is like plowing and mowing the lawn. Yeah. No maintenance to the actual
and
building.
Then have that docked at it and then carry that against the commission with the commission.
Well, and it also is an incentive for the real estate agent to move the property.
I think it's a unique large, expensive piece of property to maintain. I mean, with the large commission,
I'm going to have to revisit the resolution because I believe the resolution said that the maintenance contract was going to end at the end of this year. And going forward, maybe we would be paying for the maintenance under the real estate agreement, but there wasn't going to be two separate deals.
But again, it's month to month with it no longer paying the monthly fee to the property manager when we accept an offer.
I understand what you're saying.
And that can go, that's a very good incentive to close the second job.
I'm going to need to do some research.
Yeah, I think, sorry.
No, you.
The two that you're referring to, this one and the other one, mm-hmm. were procured at separate points also.
Yeah, and no, they were.
So, you know, there was no guarantee, and this is a unique situation because the same person bid on and was awarded both contracts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to get someone who's specialist in real property, but they don't know how to market if they're not a realtor. Right, so it could have happened that way too. So I don't. What you suggesting is not what we were. That's not our understanding. We were going forward with two separate agreements.
We have two different understandings.
Okay.
And we're at the same meetings. And Mr. Maloney, I'm sure, will shed light on it because he's the one that pushed the envelope.
Correct. What we took away was the fact that there was concern about the timing and didn't want to be seen as, you know, the realtor for whatever reason delaying the sale because they wanted to take the commission. So that's why we entered that trigger that was a month-to-month fee once there was an accepted offer.
I think you're talking past each other because what you're saying makes sense once you have the sale and you're just moving towards a closing. That removes the conflict then. But there is a conflict prior to that in terms of the person who's managing the property is making more money for a while, and or depending upon how long they continue, than they will make on the commission. Now, it's the substantial commission, so it washes that, partly takes care of this. And second, this is a small area where we didn't have the option of having two different agents handle this. So both by the exigencies of needing to have a property manager and needing to have a highly qualified large building marketer, we have a situation that I think does pose the conflict that Legislator Litz is raising, but it's mitigated by the fact that it's much to this person's benefit to go ahead and get this commission because it's a substantial increase over what it would take years to make under the management. So I think that it's that the things you're saying about closing and changing it month to month, I mean, that's good. We need to be able to get out of it quickly when we make the sale, but it doesn't address Legislator Litz's points. I agree with his points, but feel like the other elements of the situation push us to go ahead and do it this way. So maybe that'll be helpful and just, you know, I think call the vote and let people vote against it if they think it's really the worst, unacceptable.
That the fee is about $4,800 a month for the management.
It's, yeah.
I don't know how much it'll be to have to plow or mow, which this year is pretty much, I mean, unless we start getting snow, is insignificant. So to approve another $355,000 when we've already approved $1.1 means we've put almost $1.5 million into this building already that we didn't even want to keep, which
so,
is unfortunate.
But see, that's apples now, and we were talking oranges, because the monies that you pay for plowing or any of the building maintenance don't relate to the conflict of interest. That's just property monies that have to be paid to maintain that building. And, you know, that was a question. Should we, you know, give it away, you know, so that we didn't have to have that? But there's tenants, we had obligations, and you have to keep the building in saleable condition. But you should subtract out all those monies, like out of that $355,000, anything that goes towards the building is not relevant to the money that goes to the property manager and the marketer. So they're included in the same in the same contract, so that it. I mean, that's what I understood. The way the county pays for that is to have it go to the property manager, and then the property manager pays all those invoices that come in on that. And that has, that's, we set that up for good reasons. But then when you're thinking about what the property manager makes on the property, she's not making that entire amount. She's making the amount of the contract minus all those property costs, which is, I think, the nearly $5,000 a month that you mentioned, still pretty substantial. But I think we don't have many options, and we have an agent that we think is of the highest quality in both regards for the group of potential applicants for this positions, these two positions, and who has considerable reputation in the community as a, you know, as somebody with highest ethical standards. So in this circumstance, I think we should continue to hire her for both purposes, or hire her company.
And my concern's not about her qualifications. She's very qualified, and I think the only other bid we had come in as far as a realtor was, you know, the management company that didn't take care of the property in the first place.
Yeah, I'm just going to add to that. You know, we did two separate RFPs or quotes for management and real estate. Real estate agent, we received two proposals, which was Viteri and FCM, which did have some part in the leasing of the building prior to us taking it. And then when we did the quote for property management, I believe we got three quotes, and Karen Viteri was the low for that. The $355,000 is not, she's not getting paid that. Her cost is $4,800 a month. That's the budget for the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
We last year it was approved for the 9 months. So what I did when I did the budget, I just took the 9 months and made it into 12 months. So that $355,600 is the budget to keep the building running.
But that still included maintenance on the roof and
it's full maintenance. That's the budget to run the building for the year.
There is a monthly reporting that is prepared by DPW.
And we haven't spent $1 million on that.
Oh, good.
In the 9 months. I mean, I think for the 9 months, it was a little over $200,000, and that included a lot of past bills that were incurred from the previous property manager.
Okay. So my concern isn't so much the same realtor. It is the dollar amount. But I mean, it's going to need fuel, and it's going to need the maintenance. $355 sounds like a lot, but if they're not spending it, I guess I could vote yes on it. Legislator Erner.
Just get a clarification on the amount we're going to pay per month starting next year versus now. It looks like $4,800 per month starting next year, and last year
it was $48,000.
It was. I had $195,000 for 9 months. Divide that by nine, it's $21,000 a month. That's very different.
So that's the same. It's the full budget to run the building.
Okay.
So Karen Viteri's actual management fee is $4,800. That has not changed. If you look at it as a whole, the $355,000, the building's 330,000 square foot. A dollar per square foot to run a building is unheard of.
I mean, as long as we're not going to start painting or doing any maintenance outside of putting fuel in the tank, and if something catastrophic were to happen, like the, you know, the furnace stopped working, but
how to make it marketable too.
Yeah. And I do send a monthly report to the legislature that spells out what's being spent every month.
Clerk, we don't get that. It goes to Ways and Means. Okay, so we'll ask Natalie to forward that to us.
I've been doing that since day one.
Okay. All right, I feel a little bit better. Legislator Erner.
Me too. That's why I was confused, and maybe this speaks to Legislator Litz's earlier point, because what we had approved in, what was the month that we did it, the other one? What we'd approved
June,
in April.
July?
which was amended for, that was for the full amount. It says property management agreement, but it's actually, it includes the $4,800 plus all the other expenses that they were going to pay that we would, that they would incur.
Yeah, correct. So it's basically how we're doing it is she's getting the services done at the building. We're paying her, but she's paying the vendor.
The real estate. That was it.
And when the first contract ends, the next one will start at $355. We can't go back and say, well, part of negotiating to sell this building, the interested purchaser wants this done to the roof. I mean, can we keep it? Just, I don't know if that makes sense. But because I think originally when we put in for, it was almost 1.2. It was not just the monthly management, but it was oil and it was groundskeeping and it was snow removal and it was repairs to the roof. So I just want to assure that we're not going to move that money forward too, along with $355,000. The building should be sold as is. Within reason, but it should be sold as is.
The budget will, when the report that CPW prepares for Ways and Means, you will see that month to month what is actually being spent on what categories this is all broken down.
But when one contract ends, the next one starts, we're not carrying that money forward, are we?
From this
has
year?
It been
no, because it's
no.
It can't
be.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. I think I'm good.
Yep.
Yeah. Are you all right?
Cool question.
Okay. Calling the vote then. All in favor of resolution, where are we? 753?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay.
Thank you.
Resolution number 754, approving the use of a project labor agreement for capital project number 607, Ulster County Government Operations Center.
I would like to move that.
Okay. Legislator Nolan. Second it.
Legislator Erner.
Is this for the Golden Hill property or is this for our new property in Perry?
For
GOC Perry. Cool. Any other discussion?
So I guess the thank you. The backup we have here is basically they studied whether it would make sense. We hired them. They studied it. They're telling us it makes sense to do this way. And we're, by moving this ahead, we're saying we agree. Is that a fair summary?
Yes. Based on what they presented to us, yes.
All right.
And it. My understanding that with the project labor agreement, it has benefits for labor because it's built in, but it also sometimes gives advantages in terms of saving a little money over standard union rates.
Mm-hmm.
So it has benefits to all the parties.
Giant training project.
Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
Not worth contradicting unless we order more pizza.
Cauliflower.
Okay.
And I'll note that this very clearly spells out the prevailing wage rates for all the different types of worker.
Decent wages too, right?
The least I see on here is $37.09 an hour plus, plus benefits.
They can actually live in Ulster County. Okay, so I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Legislator Litz. Okay, resolution number 425, establishing a policy to liberalize access to public services for survival. Motion for discussion?
I'll move it. I'll second.
No, okay. Okay, so Erner Snowden. And this did pass Health Committee. Do you have the newly amended version? Or the version with the pencil mark through the wrong square.
So what the committee has had before it, before the amendment, I can explain what the amendment was, and then it should match what was packet.
So if I might.
Yes, please.
All right, so the way that I have transformed this from the last discussion is instead of compelling the administration to open up properties, it states the prioritization of the use of public of county property for certain purposes that we have talked about around this, especially the needs of the unhoused and underhoused and vulnerably housed community population of the county as specified in the last resolve. That last resolve was written by the administration, and I've accepted their language around that. And we cover three main areas of need that the housing insecure population most basic needs that the unhoused, unhoused or inadequately housed population might face. The three basic material needs areas include housing or shelter, and food and sanitary facilities. That's what the first resolve says. And then I've added some whereas language that explains some of the steps, especially during this legislative term, that this body has taken to justify us taking this next step. So, for example, we have designated affordable housing as a purpose of the county government. We created a fund to be utilized in compliance with that designation, and we also have urged our state and federal governments to enact a right to food, although I recognize we didn't do that unanimously as a body, but we did send that message. And as many countries have enacted that right now, this and we have legislated around other needs connected to the consumption of food, namely the production of food, with our agricultural relief program, and we have this this food security group that's meeting that we have funded, that Family Woodstock coordinates the meetings around that. So basically, all of this to me, and knowing the needs of our folks already being served by social services in temporary and emergency housing, has helped inform the new language here. And again, instead of compelling the usage of particular property in particular ways, it steers the administration to considering how to use the county's property to fulfill these basic material needs that folks have. So I hope to earn support of this committee. I recognize that three of us were in the last committee. Legislator Litz, you were not, so I'd love to hear your thoughts, especially. And thank you.
I don't see how it would be no county impact financially. To supply housing, to furthermore, the need for food, sanitary facilities, washing, basic bodily functions, all of those things require infrastructure, and that would need. What I would much rather see is rather than have public facilities opened up, I'd much rather see permanently housing those people. Take the monies you're going to spend here to. You're going to have the sheriff's office or somebody there for security, some sort of security anyway. we just had a public hearing. Unfortunately, I wasn't there for the hotel motel tax, increasing it from 2 to 4. Ironically, The governor, when she enacted home rule to allow us to do that, added a paragraph on short-term houses.
Rentals.
Short-term rentals. I don't know why that's not in our law. She thought enough of it to put it in the law allowing us to increase the hotel and bed tax. So I'm going to make a friendly amendment that get added because it's eating up the housing stock. If we had more housing stock, we could house more people. And it's gone from 2 to 4. I'd like to see at least 1% of that additional tax go towards affordable housing. Unhoused people, underhoused people, affordable housing. Dedicate that 1%. I'd like to see the other 1% go into a reserve fund to offset future county property tax. Because we've kept it flat. We haven't increased taxes for 10, 12 years. But that's going to catch up with us, especially when the federal funding that we're utilizing now to bolster our budget is not coming back. We're not going to get another $17.4 million from the federal government, not in my lifetime. So sometime in the future, we're going to have a tax increase, maybe double digits. And the people that come to this county, the tourists that are paying that hotel, motel, bed tax, short-term rental tax, should be helping the constituents of this county offset their future property tax increases. So we should be taking care of our own. And I don't know how you can provide these services in existing public buildings without building up the infrastructure, having security of some sort. So I don't know how you can put that there's no county district, there's no fiscal county impact.
On that point, this does not commit the county to any action that would have cost. It just commits the county to considering. So consider the county's considering these options for any of its properties. Is it doesn't have an anticipated cost. Doesn't have a cost. But the other points that you make, I think, bear consideration. But I think the way that legislator had this drafted initially, it should have included cost. This version, I think it's quite right that it doesn't.
Well, it does say use the word shall, and it shall study it to determine.
And shall consider, but not
on what property is suitable.
Right, but it does not say shall expend any money or shall open any property or shall open any building. All of which would have those potential costs that you enumerated.
Wouldn't you think, though, if you're going to put a study out to determine which ones should be utilized to house the unhoused or the underhoused, you're going to go through and pay money or whatever you're going to do to study it, and you come up with locations and properties that meet the criteria for this, that you wouldn't in turn do it?
You have to have a separate resolution for it. You put the cost on that resolution. It could be very different depending upon whether you're opening up a bathroom or opening up a building.
Legislator Erner.
Yeah, so originally this was about using the space study that we had already done to guide the decisions. So this still does that. We're going to take this study we did and figure out with this, setting this as our new prioritization, how we can use properties identified in that study, which
as we know, we're a lot of the property in the county, not all of it. And this is the direction. But as Legislator Nolan pointed out, it doesn't commit us to a particular action. I agree, though, Legislator Litz, that ultimately it might be that we will have to expend funds, but the particulars are, this puts this in the administration's hands to determine and bring back to us, okay, we've figured out that we could use this kitchen space in this building for folks who don't have another place to do it, and then that's going to cost this amount. Now, your point is not lost on me at all about preferring to establish permanent housing, permanent places for people to do this. I agree. I would rather do that. I see this as, though, not just for the current housing crisis, but future housing crises or future other crises where folks lose access to basic things that they need to survive, that we'll prepare ourselves to help them in the interim.
The money you're spending here for this study and all these other things, you could actually put housing somewhere. And we spoke about tiny houses and where they've been used other places in the country and in Europe to house people that need it. I think we're just throwing money here when we should be putting it there. And you'll actually house people instead of just study where we can house.
But just correct me if I'm wrong, this is for a policy? You're not pushing for a study?
Yeah.
Because I agree, I'm not big on studies either.
No, the study is being done separately.
Separately, and it's already done anyway.
Yeah.
We did the study.
Expended.
Thank you.
I agree. I wish that we had permanent housing for everybody in this county. I wish that people were not being forced from their permanent housing that they have at this very moment. And this doesn't address that directly anyway, but it also acknowledges the growing population of unhoused people in this county who, for a variety of reasons, aren't able to really eat in a humane way or go to sleep in humane conditions, in even in a hotel room that we're providing in some cases, and some of these facilities do not have adequate sanitation. And I've seen in some of the motels where you don't want to use the shower, and it's really bad. And does that mean that we shouldn't hold these places to account and demand better? No, we certainly should. And we certainly should invest any, I agree with investing funds toward a permanent solution. And again, this is a request that we act creatively and be prepared to use the property that we do have the most immediate access for these purposes. And if it turns out that erecting something more permanent. I loved your legislator list. I really appreciate you bringing up the tiny house community last time and the first chance that you had in committee to weigh in on this. It was the most positive comment I had received to that point in time about this idea even. And of course, installing the infrastructure for that is something that we, if we chose to take on, would have a cost. But it would be a well worthwhile investment in my opinion. So this doesn't necessarily lock us into that direction or another direction, but just again the plain text of it is, we want to prioritize the unhoused, underhoused, and vulnerably housed in our decisions about using our property. And that could be buildings, that could be land, park spaces, parking lots, whatever it is. Whereas crossed out notwithstanding, I would still submit that everyone who is part of this county has some claim on the space that the county owns, and it should be used for everyone's benefit, and starting with those who have the least.
Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'll move it out of committee.
Thank you. Next resolution, Ulster County Public Transportation Level of Service Policy. Motion for discussion. Let's start it, Ernest.
Second.
This resolution?
All right. So the second straight resolution of mine before us that's undergone substantial changes since I first introduced it, although the changes between last month and this are not as significant as in the previous month, but recognizing that the committee last month had requested additional time to study the details of the Exhibit A. So, to me, that's the center of this resolution. The other resolves direct the Department of Public Transportation on coordinating with some other departments and other types of government in the area and private sector to try and the public transit system all that it can be. And mainly that is involves communication and planning. And the main part of the resolution also has some asks of the state or federal government that we normally might put in a memorializing resolution. But the principal action here is in Exhibit A. And as a reminder, the way I've redone it, it no longer compels UCAT to do these things on any specific timeline and or really at all, except insofar as UCAT works to make the transit system more robust, as the results of the routing optimization study come in, as this rider intermodal advisory committee begins to do its work next year. This is a starting point. This is a starting point of guidance for what the system ought to do that is based on public feedback that we have received both through County Administration, Ulster County Transportation Council, and community advocacy groups over the past years and over a decade, in fact. And, I'm open to the committee's opinion about whether any of these really don't belong here, but I hope that you will at least consider them and as a basic way that we can direct the administration to looking into the future of the transit system. And you can see in bold some of the newest additions here, and I'd be happy to highlight a few of these and where they come from. For example, the county-owned roads thing seems to me like a matter of those are the roads we directly fund here that taxpayers of this county fund. So some sort of option for folks who don't have private cars to get around. I don't know what that looks like. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's a bus on County Route 42, but some way for the folks who live on County Route 42 to be able to get to County Route 25 is what that means. At some point down the line, orienting ourselves toward that. And another one that I added, a candidate for a legislature who did not prevail, but Keith Gergy, who has addressed us in this committee and represented RCAL, and is also an applicant to be on the Transit Riders Board, had said, well, why can't people without their own transit expect to be able to get around at any time of the day or any day of the week? So he had, part of his platform was 24/7 options for transit. Does that mean we run a bus every hour in the county? I don't think so. Probably not. But I mean, I know taxi cab companies that won't come between certain hours at this point, so we might be a long way from that, but it's also in part a vision that says, you know, if the road is open and the county executive hasn't declared a state of emergency that you can't go out, maybe that collectively we can come up with a way that people can get around, people who need paratransit, people who are younger than 16 and can't drive. You know, I guess you're probably not going to your job at that hour, but you might be going between a school function reasonably late at night. So I highlighted a couple of things, but more or less this isn't so different from last month. And I'm hoping that we can advance this and it will serve as a guiding document for the administration as they improve our transit system. Happy to take questions.
Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I think that each item on the Schedule A and most of the whereases and all the resolves deserve a lot of attention. And I am willing to commit to give that attention going forward, but not in one meeting and not to go ahead and pass this as it stands. There's more attention to some of the things I care about. You know, you've talked about how increasing access to transportation can harm the environment, which is something that I had brought up. Your proposal talks about sharing resources to deal with that, and that's a start, but there's lots that's packed into a summary here. And I think that we should have the community involved, the big community involved in this, not just the people that are complaining or identifying lack of access as a problem. If we're going to address their concern, then I think we should do it in a way that people who would have concern about the cost of making this our priority in this way would also have access to that conversation. So I think this is a huge amount of work already. It points to important areas that this committee should take up. And so I would take this as a document to guide that further conversation, but I wouldn't be prepared to support it tonight.
I have one note. You say city, village, or hamlets. Hamlet's not an identified municipality. You don't include town.
The city, towns, and villages.
Should be city, towns, and villages.
Can you point to where?
Sure. Item 6 of your exhibit A.
Oh, yeah, if I might. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a local bus route. So this wording does match my intention. And the reason is that a town doesn't necessarily identify a densely populated area where it would be appropriate to run a local circulator bus. I think of a local bus route as where you have a density, which in my knowledge of the county, which is certainly not complete, but tends to be city areas, and maybe I should be more specific about what parts of cities, but the villages, the three villages, and then hamlets, which of course are within towns, but oftentimes are the denser parts of the towns.
Mm-hmm. Which I agree, Esopus is very large, but we have 7 hamlets where there is a more condensed part of the community.
Someone lives in a town. You want to get from the town to the hamlet.
Yeah, you got
to hamlet to the rest of the town. Otherwise, from the hamlet, you don't need a bus. You can walk.
What you need here for this list is town as well as hamlet,
really,
because you might be trying to get to the hamlet of Pine Hill, which is now part of the town of Shandaken. But you might be wanting to get to the town of Plattekill and not some hamlet within it, or that you might be wanting to get to the town of Woodstock, not Bearsville.
Between the town of Woodstock or Bearsville or the town or Shady or, yes.
So for your intent, as you just explained it, you would want to have city, village, town, and hamlet. because the target might be any one of those four things.
And I want this too for my town, but I have to discuss it town. I mean, it's just important.
Yeah. No, point taken. And in fact, I've heard from Woodstockers about a desire around a circulator bus in Woodstock. And yeah, and also I did not, and so this, you know, to Legislator Nolan's point, I mean, certainly there's room to improve even what I've offered, even if we were to accept it. And I think I didn't intend for Express and Local Routes to be necessarily the entirety. I'm not sure that, for example, the KPL bus would be, which goes between Kingston and Poughkeepsie over the middle, necessarily would be just fit into either of those categories. This item was more, for example, to address Legislator Gavaris's observation that his constituents coming from Ellenville to Kingston, it can be a long ride. Could we have it so that it didn't do the diversion into SUNY Ulster or do the circulating around down in his area so that it was as quick as taking a car? But then could you have a separate circulator bus that did go around Ellenville and a separate connection that maybe the College Link bus went all the way to 209 instead of stopping at the college, and then you wouldn't need to divert. That's operations. I didn't really mean, even though this item gets to that level, I didn't necessarily mean to do that. And, you know, having taken feedback from folks around, I feel like I did some cutting back, but evidently not enough on the operational directives. So, yeah, but thank you.
So would you like to hold this and look for somebody to carry it next term? Do you want to take a vote on this now? That's answer.
I mean, you know, if
put a lot of work into it.
I would like to have a vote, and I understand it might go down in defeat. I hope that won't prejudice the future legislature from considering the content in the future.
All right, so we'll call a vote. All in favor, say aye. Opposed? Abstentions. So the vote fails. Final resolution, number 597, establishing a policy to require additional reporting and establish goals to expand paratransit services. Motion for discussion. Legislator Erner, second. Legislator Nolan. Legislator Erner, you have the floor.
Thank you. So this one could think of as a particular item.
What happened to 552?
That was pulled because it took no action in energy and environment.
Thank you.
It wasn't. Okay, Legislator.
Yeah, I've edited this as well. Originally, this would have compelled the administration to expand paratransit services beyond the state minimum. And instead, this asks the administration to come up with a plan around how it might do that after it obtains and reports to us data about the populations that would be served by that. So right now in our UCAT annual report, we get two numbers, one of which is the number of paratransit rides offered. I'd like to know the number of individual paratransit users, the number of county residents who could be paratransit eligible to the best of our knowledge. And then if we can't get that number, at least knowing the percentage or the number of county residents who live within that statutory distance, and then maybe we can go from there to zero in on the population. But what I don't want to hear is that we're beyond our capacity to serve the eligible population, because not only does that contravene state and federal law, I think that's unjust. So that this would direct the administration to get us that information and then come up with a plan that would that could enact this expansion, bearing in mind that the state has legislation that's in committee right now
that would expand paratransit services from the present 3/4 mile mandatory minimum to 3 miles, and it would fund that. And I sure hope that we get that through. I would encourage the legislators staying on to lend their voice to that, because it seems like a matter of basic justice to be able to serve those who can't drive. And as I said, the state would fund it. So we know that about half the county's population at present lives within a half mile of an existing fixed bus route. That's pretty good, but we know that half the county population doesn't take the bus. So while we're working on reckoning with that, this is a component of that. And this, I could have put this in the last resolution, as I did have something about paratransit in there, but I elected to separate this out based on this particular constituency and their particular needs.
What do you about?
Just want to remind the committee, which I know you're aware of, that we are starting with our routing study, which does include a robust stakeholder outreach to solicit feedback and also kind of input on what service could or should be in Ulster County. That in the routing study will then be coupled with data analysis, where we could perhaps the one metric that you're talking about of pulling just the population within that statutory radius from the routes, that's something that's not that difficult to pull. We get that data and pull that into kind of the current situation, also with looking at what our staffing is and our current resources are. I think that that's the basis to then look at what future service could potentially reach as far as need, and also give us information regarding the resources, both vehicles and drivers, that would be required to meet that need. So I want to include that in, again, the analysis that's currently ongoing.
So would it, could this help that effort by ensuring that that information comes from the study?
Well, there's, there's a couple different pieces. You had mentioned that there's potentially change at the state level. Is that correct? And that's not something I'm tracking, particularly as far as the paratransit funding. Is that?
The legislation that's in state committee would fund the expansion.
Okay.
Yeah.
For now, then it could be an unfunded mandate in the future. So it's just for a couple of years to get us started.
I think we can look at, because some of the data that you're referencing would be helpful, is data that I think is primarily just tied to routes and demographics. So I think that we could easily include that in the routing study. Then we'll also have what's ongoing, which is the Coordinated Human Services Plan. That's another place that has stakeholder feedback and input, and we'll have recommendations and action items from that plan as well. And I think framing it in those two ongoing efforts, studies and plans, would be an important place, rather than this standalone resolution.
Deputy LaValle, do you have a schedule yet for the public hearings? Have they been, or the public
hearings? No, but certainly we'll.
Okay. Thank you.
And we do have resources, you know, staff was here this evening from UCAT. You have some folks who have, Scott Workman has a transportation background, a mapping and GIS background. So again, somebody who can support UCAT in a way that they haven't had that kind of resource before. So I think going forward, you know, right now that team is doing a lot of, I guess you could call it deferred maintenance or kind of work on the website and on the systems and schedules and communications and things like that. So.
Yes, yeah, you're a deputy now. Legislator. Oh, goodness.
Through the chair to deputy executive. So can you just explain again how, what, if not this resolution, how we get this information out of the routing stuff and the coordinated human services plan, how we would compel that?
So you want to know the possible service population that's not potentially being served, is that correct?
Yep, both like at present and in...
What's the need that may not have, like, be known?
Mm-hmm.
I think either that would be, especially with the human services, it's more the coordinated human services plan is where I'm thinking that that should be somewhere acknowledged. And I can talk to the transportation planners about just, that's kind of a, it's not a lot of information, really. It's not a super technical, you know, paragraph, but it can be put in there and framed in part of the discussion when you're talking about what the need is for transportation. Mm-hmm. There's the known need, and then, you know, you can have some kind of, you know, I certainly know people who should be using paratransit who aren't, who would be serviceable on a route. Or stating that need.
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, I feel about this similar to what I expressed about the prior resolution, about the resolution on the public transportation level of services. I think it is good to separate this out. It deserves its separate focus because I think it has special complexities. But I think we are asking for this information, and the executive and the transportation system are also asking for it. And so I think we can use this proposed resolution as a guide for the further work that needs to be done, and then use that work to specify what our plans are for this sector of the transportation realm. And I would just caution that I'm not sure about, you know, bringing in 14th Amendment due process concerns for paratransit riders in this context, because we don't guarantee levels of service for any rider. And so I'm not sure that there is a standard that we can compare against and say that somehow we're failing. You raised the point in the level of service policy that we should be specifying those standards, and it's a challenge that you're putting down for us, and I think it's a worthy one. I have questions in my mind about the relationship of transportation to other needs, basic needs like food and housing. Transportation may be within that as well. Certainly connectivity is for me, but I'm not sure that connectivity always requires transportation, especially in 2023 and 2024. So I want to continue to work on this. There may be ways of connecting services that is not specific to paratransit users, but transportation users in general, that involve less transportation and more connectivity.
Mm-hmm. And that would be through the new committee, legislator owner.
Okay, yeah, I mean, thank you for that feedback, Legislator Nolan. I put in the 14th Amendment, the equal protection of the laws, just because it
that's what this seems to be a matter of. I mean, we have federal legislation based off the Constitution, of course, but it seems like a very basic sort of thing there, and I agree with you. We're not fulfilling the other basic levels of service, but maybe we could start with this one, which already has mandates on the state and federal level attached with it, and just reminding us about it.
Mm.
As far as, you know, other connectivity, that's, you know, our society, this country right now, we have 4% of the world's population. We consume something like 20% of the world's fossil fuel. And transportation, at least in New York State, is the single largest sector for which that's used. And if we're saying that we need to replace that with non-fossil fuel, that's still all that energy we got to get from somewhere. And that's still, you know, we're going to be still consuming disproportionately that amount of energy compared to our worldwide population. So that can't persist forever, obviously. And so, you know, in that sense, I agree with you that the thinking about connectivity, not because transportation has come in our country to be motoring, that we have to seriously reckon with that. That said, I had seen this as an opportunity to sort of do that, and maybe I didn't come across as clearly as I should have in terms of the ways in which I hope that we could think about alternatives in the legislation. But I also know that there are many people in this county right now who do need to motor and aren't able to do so. And then there's those of us who have the privilege to have access to a motor vehicle, whether it's shared or individual, that we don't really have to think about it except how much it costs for the gas and the maintenance. And so that was my attempt here, to acknowledge that inequity as it is, that doesn't discount at all the bigger picture.
I think this would be an excellent one to discuss at, you know, the Public Riders and Transit Committee, which also has a lot of reference to connectivity, you know, certainly with paratransit, because we want individuals who aren't able to drive, even if they could afford a motor vehicle, to be able to attend meetings. And I don't think I completely drop this. I'd like to see that entered into that committee discussion.
And since we're bringing that up, you know, we can say, and we have Tyron here, and we have this meeting being live streamed, right?
Yeah.
So this meeting is available, and it's at much lower carbon cost, mm-hmm. not to mention fossil fuel cost.
That's true, too.
Maybe.
I believe it is. I'd be willing to look at the evidence.
So is there any further action?
Yeah, I couldn't be at home and do this.
If you let us know in advance and give us your location.
I'd like to call the vote on this? Okay. All right, so I'm going to call the vote on resolution number 597. All in favor? Opposed? Finally, under new business, we as a legislature have created a new fleet management, if I have the right name here, Fleet Oversight Committee. And we do need to designate somebody from Public Works. There's also one coming from Ways and Means, one from Laws and Rules, and then a minority and a majority appointment. I'm interested, Legislator Witts, and he is interested as well. So, Legislator.
Okay. Isn't it?
Were you volunteering?
I was volunteering. But it should be a member of this committee in 2024, shouldn't it?
If it's appointed now, no, it'll carry through. But I would prefer personally, since Legislator Litz said he was interested. I would prefer if it was a standing member. I can't even talk anymore.
Let's give that woman another piece of meat
after 9 o'clock.
In 2024. So, yeah.
I prefer that, and I would welcome Legislator Litz as our representative, assuming that
he and I would both be on this committee in the future.
They're public meetings. Everybody can attend.
Correct.
Chair Petit, I spaced out. What are we talking about?
Probably me speaking. We have a designated person to our fleet oversight committee that was established was it a month ago. It's a 5-member commission. We need someone from Public Works, somebody from Ways and Means, somebody from Laws and Rules, and a minority and majority appointment. Legislator Litz has offered to stand in for Public Works.
I'll support that.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to call. I guess we have to make a motion because we weren't sure where to go. I guess we could just say, "Hey."
I make a motion that we designate legislator Herb Litz as the representative from Public Works Capital Projects and whatever else we call this committee.
What is the other one? W and a transportation.
And transportation.
Public Works Capital Projects.
Transportation. For the Fleet Oversight Committee.
Okay, do I have a second? Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Can you vote for yourself? All right, do I have to say any opposed or any abstentions? Okay. Under old business?
when you plan on
starting to meet?
Yeah.
After the first
I haven't heard that. January or February.
I would like to say this is my last Public Works meeting.
Capital
Projects and Transportation. So it's been a pleasure.
It doesn't mean you can't come to the next one.
I can still come. I should just sit in the corner over there and push
and heckle. And heckle.
That's a double entendre because he's got a lot of.
So it's been a real pleasure. Maybe it's been a great, very active committee. We've had everything under the sun in front of us, from building bridges to expanding routes and putting in housing, and it's quite a lot. So, and good luck next year for those of you who are coming back. I'm sure Legislator Erner will bump into each other quite a bit anyway in our next lives. But and thank you, Clerk Tierney, for being here for all this extended hours. I appreciate it. And thank you, too, for Legislator-elect Jeff Collins for attending these meetings. It's really nice to see that you're hitting the ground running.
He'll be up and running.
Yeah, for sure. So
I'd like to express my appreciation for Chair Petit for her service.
Yes, here, here.
And I think that she sustained us through tonight's meeting in multiple
and
ways.
And every meeting.
thank you very much. And thank you to the executive.
Thank you for your
well.
Service.
Thank you, sir. And Legislator Litz, would you like to do us the honor?
Hearing nothing further, I will make a motion for adjournment.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. None opposed. Thank you very much.